Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We don't quite have a quorum for committee, but we are going to get started. We'll leave the minutes for later. I may have to interrupt to get those minutes approved when the time comes. Thank you for being here today. We're going to start out this afternoon with a presentation from DOT regarding the airport fund. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you. My name is Cassandra Isaacson, and I am the Director of Aeronautics for MnDOT. And I really didn't prepare any slides or anything for you guys. I just wanted to provide you some information on the State Airports Fund. The governor's budget recommendation, there's two projects you're going to hear today, both Duluth and Rochester. Actually, it's three projects. Duluth has two airports that they'll be requesting funds for. The governor's budget recommendation is that instead of bonding, those projects be cash from the State Airports Fund. The State Airports Fund has several revenue sources. Those sources include sales tax from aircraft, aircraft registration, aviation fuels, and airline flight property tax. And as we've looked at the fund and our plans for this next fiscal year, the recommendation was that these projects could come from the fund in addition to our regular plan spending that has already been appropriated by the legislature.
I'm going to interrupt you for just a moment. We have a quorum. I will call the meeting to order. Representative Dean looks like he has thoroughly studied the minutes and moves their approval.
Yes,
any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed by the same sign. The minutes of Tuesday, March 22nd are approved. Please, did you have more? Or can I ask you a question?
Questions.
Now, it's my understanding that it's somewhat unusual that the airports fund has this surplus balance that's available for capital projects. Can you just talk about that a little bit so that we understand that this circumstance isn't normal? I don't want people to think they can just be raiding your fund any old time.
Sure. I appreciate that. Typically, the fund is about $20 million a year. There are a lot of different things going on in the last few years related to the fund. One is that several years ago, $15 million was taken from the fund as part of balancing the budget, and this fund was on the list to be reimbursed if there was a surplus, and so we were reimbursed, so that's a piece of it. We're early on, just 2 years ago, aviation tax law was restructured, and so as revenues have come in and we've been doing our forecasts, it just was a good timing for these projects. Typically, really large capital projects like this are out of reach of the fund. There's 135 public airports in the state. This $20 million each year goes to not only projects, but also maintenance and operations at those airports. I think our average that we give an airport for maintenance and operation is it's less than $20,000 a year. So it really does spread across the state. It pays our salaries. We own half the navigation systems in the state. So that $20 million does a lot of good in a lot of communities across Minnesota.
Thank you for that explanation. Representative Wagenius has a question.
Yes, thank you. It is part of the good that it does are insulating folks' homes for noise.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, typically those kinds of things are part of federal programs with noise mitigation. So, for example, Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, I know they've done a lot of work. Some of the smaller airports, typically those noise profiles, most of these are very rural areas. So,
a follow-up, Representative Guineas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, there is a new need because of the new footprint.
Sure.
So, would you have enough money if there wasn't federal money? Because we all know about federal money these days. Would there be enough money to cover the obligations for noise mitigation?
Ms. Isaacson.
Mr. Chairman, at a particular airport?
Or MSP.
At MSP? Typically, no. MSP would be they have their own revenue sources that they would be typically looking at for that. And so not quite sure what they have planned or not planned.
Representative Wagenius, sorry, that's Very good.
Thank you.
I don't see any other questions for you right now, but stay tuned. We may need you to come back. Thank you. Next up, we have the Rochester International Airport folks here. And if you didn't notice on your way in, committee members, there are some treats, and I believe the responsible party is before us. Would you care to illuminate us, Representative Pearson? Welcome to the committee testifier table.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Chair Torkelson. Yes, as is tradition, I believe this is the first time I've been in front of capital investment, so I'm hoping that you will accept and be gentle with me with these donut holes, balls, donuts. Enjoy.
Just a second. Representative Dean, I think, has a very important point to make.
Yes,
very
good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is, where are the donuts? Why only the holes?
I don't know. Still at the store.
Okay.
Thank you for your patience with
me.
I'm new at this.
Because he's a good conservative and doesn't want anything to go to waste.
Thank you. That's the gusty way. Thank you very much, Chair Torkelson. Yes, we come before you today. Obviously, the airport at Rochester, the international airport at Rochester, risks losing its international status, and this is something that's been known for some time. Something we've been asking for delay in the feds coming in and requiring. You'll get a little bit more background on that on some of the statistics and data. I know many of you came out to Rochester during the bonding tour, and I greatly appreciate you taking a stop out at the Rochester International Airport. For me personally, the Rochester International Airport means a nice, simple, easy way to travel internationally. Before I was even thinking about running for the state legislature, I took a trip out to Spain, and I traveled with my mother, who would be very mad at me if I explained how of her actual age, but let's just say she has a little bit more delicacy in getting around in a large airport like MSP. And instead of flying out of MSP, we chose the Rochester International Airport. It's clean, it's easy to get around in, it's a quality, great services out there. And it's something that, as I reflect on that, as we have patients that arrive in our community, in our state, having that direct access to our community and the ability to get in and out of the Rochester International Airport versus other alternatives that are out there that may take a longer amount of time to travel to wherever they're seeking care is very vital to our, not just the community of Rochester, but frankly to our state. And it is a regional airport, obviously serves people from all over southern Minnesota, and again, just on a larger scale. So something that's very important to us, our community, and I've brought along, in fact, our delegation. We've got, I believe, Senator Senjum, Representative Liebling are here in the audience in support. I have Mayor Ardell Brady from the city of Rochester, and I'll actually let Mayor Brady take over.
Good. Thank you, Representative.
For the record.
Thank you,
Senator
Chair,
for the record.
And representatives, thanks for hearing us. I, as mayor, I also chair the Airport Commission in Rochester, and also I'm on the Center for Transportation Studies, where a number of these things come up as well. I, again, thank you for listening to us, and I introduce our Airport Director, John Reed, who's been with us for a little over a year now, year and a half about, I think, and doing a great job. And we have this request that's important to not only Rochester, but the state of Minnesota, to make sure that our customs and process is meets the regulations and requests that come from the federal government for us to maintain that international status. So with that, Mr. Reed.
Thank you, Mayor Brady. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Reed. I'm the Executive Director at Rochester International Airport. I thank you for the opportunity to be here today and to share the critical nature of the City of Rochester's request for this federally mandated upgrade to our U.S. Customs facility. In 2002, U.S. Customs and Border Protection notified Rochester International Airport that the airport's current customs facility does not comply with space, safety, and security standards required by CBP. Since that time, we've been working with U.S. Customs on what's required and then analyzing that for the best and most fiscally responsible approach to addressing the requirements. The consequences of noncompliance with these requirements will ultimately trigger a 120-day notice that Rochester International Airport would lose its international status. While Customs is requiring upgrades to our customs facility, there are no federal dollars from U.S. Customs to support implementing the requirements. This is an unfunded mandate from U.S. Customs. Since September 11, 2001, Customs has been steadily upgrading their operations, security, and space requirements. In order to comply with the most current standards, Rochester International Airport must provide facilities adequate to meet requirements based on the already existing level of traffic processed through CBP staff at Rochester International Airport. Few examples of that. That includes segregated and secure primary and secondary inspection rooms for arriving passengers, segregated and secure ADA compliant restroom facilities for arriving passengers, lockup facilities for detained passengers, segregated and secure luggage and cargo inspection areas, secure storage for impounded cargo, electronic data rooms to permit the installation of CBP systems, administrative spaces, break rooms, restrooms, and storage areas for CBP staff. I can assure you that we've explored all options and our request reflects the most efficient and financially prudent approach to meet the requirements laid out by CBP. The cost of the project is $10.5 million. The City of Rochester is contributing $2.775 million. The Federal Aviation Administration has committed $2.74 million to this project for a total of $5.515 million in non-state funding. The requested $4.985 million in state bonding represents 47% of the total project cost. Again, we've explored multiple potential sources of funding, including state and federal entitlement and discretionary dollars. Again, from our point of view at this point, there's no funding available for U.S. Customs and Border Patrol or from Homeland Security for this project. Rochester International Airport is a vital part of our region and is an integral part of assuring that the world has access to our region and state. RST continues to grow and attract more international flights to our state. In 2014, there were 236 inbound international aircraft into Rochester. That's a 29% increase over 2013. U.S. Customs reported 1,895 international passengers and crew were processed through 14. That's an increase of 86% over the 1,018 passengers from 2013. In 2015, we had 201 arriving aircraft that had 1,183 passengers and crew. Additionally, in 2015, the airport received 8 international diplomatic flights, which required CBP presence, and 51 outbound charter aircraft that required their presence. We have great and broad local support for this project, and that's reflected in the list of supporters that's in your packet. These organizations are keenly aware of the economic benefit to our region and from international travelers who access our regional business, attend conferences, stay in hotels, and add to the regional and state economy. This infrastructure project assures that Rochester International Airport can continue to receive international customers who come to Minnesota. The airport's a vital part of the region, and it's an integral part of the multimodal transportation network that ensures the world has access to Southeast Minnesota. We'd appreciate your consideration and support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Tice has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not really sure who wants to answer this, but I think in light of current events and we're seeing some issues outside of the security area and knowing sometimes how, you know, things get mandated, you got to do some different things. Are you already maybe just discussing what possibilities might be made to your plan with security going forward, or is that not a part of this? Do you get what I'm saying?
Representative Pearson?
I'll have Mr. Reed answer.
Oh, Mr. Reed.
Mr. Chair and ma'am, we're constantly evaluating security. Security is a tremendous part of the plans that are being put together now for this facility. That's about as far as I could really talk deep about security in an open environment.
Okay.
Okay.
I might add, Mr. Chair, if you recall on the tour, you know, frankly, the facilities, once you're in the Rochester International Airport, once you, even outside of security, there's really not much there before you are screened. So I think if anything, an airport of this size is probably something that is better managed because of that close proximity between the entry and the actual security access areas. So,
thank you. I would like to recognize that Representative Liebling and Senator Senjum are in the audience. Did either of you have anything to add? They're just lending you moral support. Oh, I spoke too soon.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving me the opportunity to come up and address you. And I don't know if the committee got to see this when the committee was there, but if you take the tour of the Rochester Airport, you see where the current screening area is for international people. And you heard Mr. Reed talk about the numbers of arriving international passengers. There's a teeny tiny little office there for this border patrol or border control function. And it's pretty dramatic how inadequate that really is. And when we think about DMC and we think about the whole growth of the whole Southeast Minnesota region and what's expected there, really one of the key components I think everyone would recognize is that people have to be able to get to Rochester and get out of Rochester. And we do have this wonderful little airport, as Representative Pearson described, but the thing is that sometimes, you know, being a small airport can have its drawbacks as well. And the capacity to be able to expand the capacity and be able to keep up with modern requirements is absolutely critical to support the other investments that the legislature has made or will be making in Rochester, actually since the DMC money really hasn't started to flow. But it's really important to support our economy in the region, and I think that's hard to overstate that. So
thank
I
you,
really hope the committee will consider this request.
Appreciate it. Any closing remarks, Representative Pearson?
No, thank you for your time, committee.
Thank you all for being here today. We're going to go on to the Duluth Airport.
Thank you.
There we go. Very good. Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Warner. I'm the executive director of the Duluth International Airport and Sky Harbor Airport, which we'll be talking about with you today.
Mr. Chair, member of the committee, my name is Scott Sanis. I work for Short Elliott Hendrickson. We are a consulting firm supporting the Airport Authority.
Thank you.
So, members of the committee, I'd like to thank you for, during the bond tour, your trip up to our airport. We had a wonderful period of time at the 148th, and you got up close and personal with some of their activities as well as their membership. So thank you for making that trip. I'd like to just refresh the presentation that you received from me during that tour, talking about our project that does incorporate investment in both the Duluth International Airport and Sky Harbor. So a little bit about Duluth Aviation as an economic driver. There has been a lot of work over the last decade to grow a aviation cluster at the Duluth International Airport and aviation within our region that has really taken national and international notice. We have a very diverse aviation cluster, and its economic impact is not small. The Duluth International Airport alone has a regional economic impact of $1.3 billion, and it is in part because of the infrastructure that provides the facilities necessary for all of our aviation partners. The funding request for the 2016 session covers both airports. You'll recall I talked about the leverage of the Airport Improvement Program grant system through the FAA, which will fund 90% of our runway and infrastructure improvements at both of our airports over that period of time. In the next 4 years, we will redo our main runway at Duluth International, which is 60 years old, as well as our runway at Sky Harbor Airport, a seaplane base down on the shore of Lake Superior. 90% funding from outside the state of Minnesota is a tremendous investment, and in order to match that, we're asking the State Airports Fund for an appropriation to match the final 10%. So on slide 3, you'll see the breakdown of that between the two airports. The total ask is $5.2 million between the two, and this really centers in on the two runway projects in the first 4 years. So a little bit about the runway project at Duluth International. The 2-mile-long main runway has been a very, very valuable piece of infrastructure. I call it the backbone of our airport. It's vitally important. If we don't have a suitable runway, business doesn't thrive. People can't travel in and out of a region, and so we certainly need to take care of that. It's 60 years old. It was built as part of the infrastructure boom in the 1950s, and like much of our infrastructure across the state and around the country, it's now due and time to do a full-depth reconstruction of that asset. There again, we're leveraging 90% of the funding through the FAA and requesting a 10% match in state airport funds. Just in summary on the Duluth International Airport, the scope of this project is the main runway and associated taxiways in the next 4 years. We have commercial passenger service servicing over 300,000 annual passengers. We support the 148th Fighter Wing, who has over 1,000 full-time and part-time jobs into that, adding economic benefit to Duluth and the surrounding areas. General aviation traffic of over 25,000 operations annually. Plenty of additional property to develop as we grow our aviation cluster. And a recent addition on-site of higher ed with Lake Superior College, who has an established program now providing pilots and aviation mechanics, supplying a talent pipeline for that cluster and helping it sustain well into the future. Sky Harbor Airport is our second airport that the Duluth Airport Authority is custodian of. We are undertaking a environmental preservation, a natural resource preservation project. There is an old growth forest that through an environmental assessment over the last 7 years, we were able to find compatibility of aviation alongside of this natural resource. So we are going to be rebuilding the runway, tilting it about 5 degrees to avoid the old growth forest in the aircraft approach. This project has supported the FAA. They'll be funding 90% of it. And again, we're asking the State Airports Fund for the final 10% match.
Mr. Werner, could you point out on that diagram where the forest is?
Yes, the forest are the green sections. That's actually SNA protected old growth forest.
And what kind of trees do we have in that forest?
They're old growth pine, white pine.
Aren't they something special?
The SNA program, and I'll tread very lightly because I'm certainly not a scientist with the DNR, but the SNA program has special scientific study significance through the DNR, has protected status, and you know, from a layman's perspective, you know, Minnesota Point obviously is a sandbar, and having an old growth forest of this kind is very, very unique, not only to Minnesota, but to the entire Great Lakes watershed, and so it does have a protected status. Through the 7-year process, I'm gratified that we're able to find a solution that allowed aviation business to exist side by side with such a delicate resource.
I thank you for that.
So in summary, on Sky Harbor, the project scope is the rebuilding of the runway, taxiway, seawall, and seaplane ramp. It is, the initiative does preserve an old-growth pine forest, scientific and natural area. We're on a conditional licensure with MnDOT because of this condition right now until we rebuild the runway and deconflict that with the old-growth pine forest. That will help us maintain our airport licensure and position Sky Harbor as another aviation asset in northern Minnesota. It's a general aviation gateway to our region, and its proximity to the tourism epicenter downtown Duluth in the Canal Park area makes it very convenient for tourists that would choose to come in, possibly do some underwing camping, enjoy the sights and sounds on the shore of Lake Superior, and we have many people that take advantage of that. It is a key aviation center for education. The Duluth Aviation Institute is based there, working with tomorrow's aviators in STEM in many of the school districts around the area and preparing them for the science and math-related jobs to come. And we are a U.S. Customs facility, airport of entry, and process over 500 visitors annually to the U.S. via Sky Harbor. So again, our funding request is for critical infrastructure, our two runways, the backbones of our airports, if you will. The current project at Duluth International is currently proposed during the mobilization of the 148, which is timed well as to not disrupt our operations. We received an unprecedented FAA discretionary grant in support of this project. It's the largest discretionary grant of its kind for a project of this type in the last 10 years to come to the state. So extremely attractive project to the FAA, and state airport funds would leverage not the 90% federal contribution. So again, you see the summary of the total project, $52 million program, 90% of that leveraged from outside the state through the FAA, and we certainly would request your support. Thank you. That concludes my brief.
Thank you. I see Representative Murphy is in the audience. Did you care to make any remarks, Representative? She's thinking about it.
I would just like to thank the committee for being so hospitable to the people from the airport and the people from all the projects of northeastern Minnesota that you have listened to in the past 3 days. All our projects are important. You're on airports today, and the presentation that the Airport Authority has just given you sums up the project.
Thank you, Representative Murphy, and thank you for your hospitality when we were in your neighborhood. It's greatly appreciated. We have a question from Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, a question with two parts. I understand Cirrus Aircraft is very nearby the aircraft. I'm just wondering what input or coordination the airport has with their intention for growth in the area.
Mr. Werner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we talk with Cirrus quite a bit, about their plans, and certainly are excited to support them as they grow. We were intimately involved in site selection of their completion center, which was before the legislature last year for support, and are excited to have additional dialogue as they grow. The jet that is the next airframe that Cirrus will be working on won't be the last airframe that is designed at Cirrus Aircraft. So we're very excited that through the Completion Center project that was recently approved and will break ground very, very soon, that research and development will have a stable home in Duluth, Minnesota, and with it, Tomorrow's Aviation has an exciting place at the Duluth International Airport. So coordination and excitement around working with Cirrus is happens today and will happen in the future.
Thank you. A follow-up, Representative Albright?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your testimony, you mentioned the receipt of an unprecedented grant from the FAA. I'm just curious if they elaborated in terms of the rationale for that grant in terms of your request, or was it something that, it came voluntarily from them?
Mr. Warner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the unprecedented grant was how I characterize that was it's the largest discretionary grant of its kind to come to the state in the last decade. So in that way, very, very unique, and I think it highlights what a priority runways are to the FAA. The FAA has its own ranking system and its own methodology in determining how they support projects of this type. Runways are of the highest priority area. We have engineering studies that say that our 60-year-old runway is nearing the useful end of its life. The FAA recognizes that and has seen that engineering data, and so I think this is just recognition of the fact that they see that as a vital resource to our airport and are happy to support it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Runbeck has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question on, do you have handy the number of takeoffs and landings at both airports?
Mr. Warner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm sorry I don't, but we certainly can get that to you.
Yeah, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. I see no more questions on the list. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you for your time.
That I just remind members that these airport projects, we are expected to be funded by the airport fund, and that would mean that they probably will not be in our bill. They can be taken care of in the transportation bill, so we may not have to deal with them in the capital investment bill this year, but that remains to be seen. Next, we have we're going to move on to freight and rail projects, but we're going to have an overview of those first by a representative from DOT. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bill Gardner. I'm Director of the Office of Freight and Commercial Vehicle Operations at the Minnesota Department of Transportation. I'd like to make just some brief introductory remarks in support of the speakers who will be following me. As you know, Minnesota's rail network is very important for the economy. It provides our producers and manufacturers a cost-effective shipping option and helps to keep trucks off of our roads and bridges and lessen wear and tear. In the last few years, the largest railroads have been expanding their capacity in the state, in some cases effectively doubling their capacity by adding a second track. This is going to allow for continued growth in rail traffic into the future. According to our new state rail plan, rail volumes will increase nearly 100% over the next 25 years. That's the projection. With increased rail traffic, however, comes increased impacts on communities, including delays for motorists at crossings, increased risks of accidents between trains and motorists. And one of the busiest rail lines in the state, we have upwards of 80 to 90 trains per day. This delays motorists, it blocks emergency responders. When minutes count, it stops school buses, it compromises evacuation routes, and it divides communities. In recent years, the transportation of Bakken crude oil has introduced a new risk onto some of these rail lines into our communities. For rail crossings that have high volumes of train traffic, including Bakken crude oil trains, along with high volumes of road traffic, grade separating the rail line and the roadway eliminates delays to the motorists and it eliminates potential crashes between motor vehicles and trains, including those that might result in a crude oil tanker car explosion. In a study that we conducted of crossing safety on all 700 miles of rail line carrying Bakken crude oil, we looked at every one of the 683 rail crossings. We included an assessment of community vulnerability at those locations, and we recommended a variety of safety strategies be implemented in a number of locations, including grade separations, and we recommended a total of 15 grade separations on these routes. Of those 15 locations, the three that you're going to hear about today were the highest priority in our study. These three projects in Moorhead and Coon Rapids and in Red Wing are all recommended in the governor's capital budget, and we are in full support of them. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Gardner. I do have a question from Representative Hausman.
Oh,
she was just waving.
I don't see any questions right now. Maybe we'll need to bring you back, but we'll go on with the presentations on the individual projects. Thank you for being before the committee. First up, we have the City of Moorhead. Welcome to committee, Representative Lean. Would you like to make some introductory remarks?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for giving some attention to this issue, hearing this request we have. The bill I had introduced last year would be a $47 million request for two phases of a grade separation. I should say a multi-phased grade separation project. It's kind of two projects, one request. In the City of Moorhead, one is for a grade separation in downtown Moorhead. The other one is for a grade separation closer to Moorhead High School. And that's the one we really want to focus on this year, the one closer to the high school. We have an issue where we have kind of a complex intersection right in the city, completely unmarked, no crossing arms, nothing at this rail intersection. It's close to Moorhead High School, so we have the obviously public safety issues with kids crossing the tracks, school buses crossing the tracks. Again, no arms, safety arms at this intersection right now. So that's certainly a very important public safety issue. And the initial request was for $47 million. Last year we were planning on, or hoping, $34.5 million of that could go toward this first phase, the 2021st Street intersection by Moorhead High School. We did not get funding for it last year, and the governor has appropriated another $8.7 million to cover MMB's inflationary costs. So that brings the appropriation through the bonding bill this year that we're requesting up to $42.26 million. This project is number one on MnDOT's list of rail infrastructure projects we need to address around the state. Also, the governor has included it in his budget proposal for this year. So that's kind of a high overview of the project, and I'll let Mr. Scott Hutchins from the City of Moorhead, as well as Fire Chief Dyson from the City of Moorhead, explain more of the details.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation. You might want to bring the microphone just a little bit closer.
Good afternoon. Thank Scott you. Hutchins, City of Moorhead. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Thank you, Representative Lean, for that introduction. As Representative Lean notes, we'll focus primarily on 2021st Street grade separation today. Many of you may be familiar with this. Many of you may have come to Moorhead this past August, and thank you if you did. Appreciate that that you took that opportunity to visit our community. With us also today is Mr. Rich Dyson, who is the fire chief of the City of Moorhead, and he'll say a few words as well. And I do have, after some brief remarks, a bit of an interesting video presentation, just a couple of minutes showing how this project will unfold, and I think you may find it interesting. First, some general comments. The 2021st Street grade separation is and has been for many years Moorhead's highest priority project, and has been recently, as Mr. Gardner noted, one of the highest priority grade separation projects in the state of Minnesota. We have attempted as a community no less than four times to secure federal funding through the federal Tiger Grant program for this project, and while some projects have been financed in Minnesota, unfortunately ours has not. And with a project of this magnitude, every year's delay adds significant inflationary costs due to construction inflation. Moorhead is bisected by five active rail lines, and nearly 100 trains a day pass through our community, several of which carry North Dakota Bakken crude oil and other hazardous materials. Numerous at-grade crossings are blocked by trains 4 to 6 hours per day, and this presents not only a safety concern but is an obstacle to economic development and community development generally in our community. The 2021st Street grade separation, when constructed, will significantly benefit public safety operations in the community by reducing automobile, petroleum, truck conflicts. There are presently 75 petroleum tankers a day that use this intersection. There's a tank farm located just within blocks of this a proposed grade separation area, school bus crossings, nearly 130, as noted by Representative Lean. There's a high school just very close by. And also we have Minnesota State University at Moorhead, located just within blocks. So this is a very strategically located area in our community. The 21st Street grade separation is shovel ready. This is a project that the city has expended $6.6 million to date. We have done the environmental review, the preliminary engineering, the final engineering on the project, acquired the right-of-way, and if financed, this project will be bid this fall and under construction next spring. That would be our plan and hope. We recognize the cost of this project is significant. However, it's complexity of this project that drives the cost. The 2021st Street grade separation is not, as if any of these are routine, and none I suspect are, but it's not a single railroad bridge over a single roadway. The project requires the following, just a couple of components. Existing geometry prohibits lesser cost alternatives such as rail crossing gates. As Representative Lean mentioned, there are none there, and there cannot be given this. The rail line cuts diagonally through this crossing. Also, it had been looked at years ago in the preliminary engineering work whether or not an overpass as opposed to an underpass. That too, that alternative would have been even more expensive. So it has that those characteristics which drive cross. Construction occurs at an intersection of two high-volume streets within an urban area, and the need is to separate two rail lines here in this intersection. So a couple of specific components of cost that drive cost here: three railroad bridges and extensive excavation, a large amount of retaining wall work needs to be done. The retaining walls and three railroad bridges alone are $20 million. Due to the large footprint, again, extensive excavation, estimated cost $10 million. And there is a railroad Y to be constructed. So right now we have a situation where trains coming from these two feeder lines into the main line to maneuver and get into the Dilworth Railroad Yard need to back through downtown Moorhead and then go. Coming out, they back. They have all these kinds of movements. And if for those that visited, you see we have several grade separations or at-grade crossings in downtown Moorhead. And when those movements occur, everybody sees a train coming, and it's slow and slow and slow, and they think it's just about to the end, and then it stops, and it reverses. It goes the other way. So it's a very problematic situation, and this Y, which is $4 million, will take care of that. So those are some of the background points on the community and the impact of rail, the external impact of crude oil shipments and other kinds of shipments, increasing freight over the next coming years, as Mr. Gardner points out. We'd like to show just a quick video and then have Rich Dyson, the fire chief, conclude with a couple of remarks and then stand for questions.
Very good. Looks like you're connected.
Now, what Andy Pomeroy is getting ready. Okay, so these show perspectives. This is coming north on 20th Street, and you see this odd intersection. That is the 2021st Street area. You see a railroad track running right through it. You see a railroad track to the north. You see in this animation a need for one bridge to cross. The whole intersection is moved just a bit, and there are the other two intersections. And these four roadways that, or these two roadways then that intersect in this major intersection, they'll be depressed and down into this big bowl, and that accounts for the excavation and the cost. Now I think we're going to show one more here. Now again, there. So to get a sense of the existing intersection, 2021st Street, how it will change, that'll be a depression underneath. Those tracks are at grade. They'll remain at grade. The two bridges, one, two, and the third coming over the other street. And that is a little animation that I think helps explain a little bit the complexity of the project and what has to be done. And this shows the Y, the railroad Y, where this train coming up from the south now will pull right onto the mainline BN track and head directly east into the Dilworth Yards. Instead of, as it was coming before, it would go to the west, up onto the main line, and back into the yards. That conflict is eliminated by that addition of the Y. So thank you. Rich Dyson, Fire Chief.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Rich Dyson. I'm the Fire Chief for the City of Moorhead. I came down because I thought this project was very important for me to chime in on a little bit. We started recording train blockages in our fire department responses in 2014. Alone in 2015, we had 157 emergency responses that were delayed by more than 4 minutes. And I heard Mr. Gardner say that in public safety that minutes matter. And actually, with all due respect, I don't mean to correct you, but seconds count to us. Our standards are that we need to respond. Our travel time should be no more than 240 seconds to a cardiac arrest or a working fire. And we're delayed on a minimum of 5 minutes when we have from our north station when we're going to one of our first in due areas. It would normally take us 1 or 2 or 3 minutes to respond. It's taking us 8 to 10 minutes to respond. And we're seeing poor results for that. I've been on the fire department for 21 years, and we've been talking about getting a project like this, and I heard that they were talking about it a long time before that. And so I know it's very expensive, but it's something that our citizens will definitely benefit from, and I just really hope that we can get this through and get the funding for the project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hutchins and Mr. Dyson. Any closing remarks, Representative Lean?
No, Mr. Chair, other than thank you for your committee's time and attention on this issue.
Thank you for bringing it forward. I do not see any questions from committee members. You did such a great job and had such a great video that we are speechless. Thank you
very much.
Next up, we have the City of Red Wing. I got a note from Representative Kelly. He wished he could be here, but he had a conflict, so you'll have to go on without him. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation. Ma'am, could you get closer to a microphone?
Sure thing.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I'm Peggy Rader. I'm the Vice President of the Red Wing City Council. And with me today is Ron Rosenthal, who is the Director of Engineering for the City of Red Wing. We'd like to thank the committee members for the opportunity to testify here today in support of the rail grade separation project. We really appreciate the time that you all have already spent in our community looking at this project and at the other bonding projects that we have and the consideration you've been giving to them. Sturgeon Lake Road is a busy four-lane roadway that serves as the only public access to tribal lands of the Prairie Island Indian community and its Treasure Island Resort and Casino, Xcel Energy's Prairie Island Nuclear Generating Plant, and the United States Army Corps of Engineers Lock and Dam Number 3. Many of you will recall from your committee tour in September of last year that the rail crossing is a concern that the city and affected parties have been attempting to address for over a decade, as it poses a public safety risk and causes regular delays for residents, businesses, and visitors. The current rail crossing is traversed by 12,600 vehicles on an average day and carries an average of 40 trains a day, including trains carrying crude oil, ethanol, and other hazardous substances. We're on the path from the Bakken oil fields, like many other communities with railroads. Of particular concern is the presence of trains on Sturgeon Lake Road, creating a barrier for our emergency responders. The proposed improvement would enhance public safety by ensuring that emergency responders are able to reach the Prairie Island Indian community, the Treasure Island Resort and Casino, and the Prairie Island Nuclear Generating Plant, and others in need without delay. Such unfettered access by emergency personnel is critical, as brain damage, for instance, can occur within minutes of a heart attack, Fires can grow exponentially over short periods of time, and time is of the essence in the event of any incident at the nuclear plant or the lock and dam. Additionally, if there was an event at either lock and dam number 3 or Prairie Island nuclear plant, there would be the considerable possibility that trains could be halted, and that would then block our road access. So we don't have our fire chief here with us today, but we certainly bring his very strong concerns, as well as that of our chief of police, in terms of public safety issues that we sometimes need to quickly address.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record.
Yes. My name is Ron Rosenthal. I'm the engineering director for the city of Red Wing. And thank you, Chair Torkelson, for hearing us here today, and the rest of the committee. In 2003, the city of Red Wing received 2 federal earmark grants for preliminary design and environmental review on this project, and we've been working on it ever since then. To date, we've spent over $1.7 million between federal earmarks and city money, and the project engineering and design is now completed. We've just finished up our consultant contract, and the plans have been signed by the consultant engineering, the city engineering, and we've made the final changes that MnDOT has required to the plan, and the plan is being sent to them here yet this week. So in the next week or two, the project will be completely signed off on and shovel ready. Scope of the project, and you do in your packet, you've got layout of the project. Sorry we don't have a video of it like the last group did, but this isn't quite as complicated as their project. But the scope of the project does entail the grade separation over the Canadian Pacific's Railway's mainline track on Sturgeon Lake Road in Red Wing, Minnesota. Sturgeon Lake Road is a city municipal state aid route under the city's jurisdiction. The project also includes the roadway realignment to square up better to the tracks, because right now we are at a pretty severe skew, the road is with the tracks, so we have to get off the existing alignment and square it up better, which actually saves money on the project for a shorter bridge. There will be bike and pedestrian facilities on the project with a new trail connection beside Island Boulevard, which is near the Prairie Island Indian Communities Police Station, so that the trail and connections can lead to the Prairie Island Indian Communities Health Clinic, Fitness Center, and Basic Community Center, which on your level 2 layout that's in your packet, it's on this very southeast corner of the layout. There is where the ball fields are, and then the south of that is the community center. The next steps, once we do get some funding on this project for construction, we have to get a concurrence and signature from the tribal community on the memorandum of understanding, which is for the local road connections, tribal lands needed for a right-of-way. There are some small portions of the right-of-way that are on tribal lands, and then the construction funding. We also have to proceed with the other right-of-way acquisition, which we have willing sellers on the, which would be the west side of the tracks, with Xcel Energy having their roadway adjacent to ours, and then a farm field south of that. So with that, I don't have much more for presentation, so if there are questions, I sure would love to have them. I've kind of lived this project now for over 10 years, so
wow,
quite a bit of knowledge on it.
Thank you, Ms. Rader and Mr. Rosenthal. Do we have any member questions? I don't see any. Even without a video, you did a fine job, so thank you for coming to committee and presenting your project.
Yes, thank you.
Next, we have the City of Coon Rapids. Maybe. There seems to be a hesitancy. I don't know. Representative Uglum, would you care to introduce the project?
Mr. Chair, yes, we were waiting for Representative Hortman, but she must have stepped out. This is the Coon Rapids Rail Grade Separation Project. for $12.6 million. This is Hanson Boulevard. It is MnDOT's number one priority for grade separation. And perhaps what really makes this project different, too, is the proximity of so many residences to the area. We have our mayor of Coon Rapids, Jerry Cook, our fire chief, John Piper, and Commissioner Scott Schulte here to give additional testimony. I'll turn it over to the mayor.
Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Good afternoon, Chair Torkelson, representatives. I am Jerry Cook. The last name is spelled K-O-C-H. I am the mayor of the city of Coon Rapids, and I thank you for taking time to hear our request today. I don't have a lot to add to what DOT, Mr. Gardner, reported. That really covers most of our grade separation desires. In Coon Rapids, we're a little bit unique in that Coon Rapids developed around the Red River Oxcart Trail. And all of our development kind of went along that route, which was all on one side of those main railroad tracks. When in the 60s, U.S. Highway 10 was developed and moved from there out to the north side of Coon Rapids, and our development followed. And now we've got about half of our development on either side of these double main lines that go through town, which creates a lot of obstacles for our residents and for our public safety. We've got an intersection now of about 12,500 cars and 81 trains a day all intersecting at this Hanson Boulevard grade separation, and it's causing heartburn for residents that are stuck waiting for anywhere from 5 minutes to 30 minutes for these trains. We're the perfect distance, apparently, from the Northtown rail yard for trains to stage. So you'll pull up, the crossing arms start to go down, one train will start to move, and then another one will stop, and you're all of a sudden you're there for 25 minutes. It's really it's draining on our residents, it's draining on our economics, and that's kind of what I'm here to lay out for our residents. And now I would like to turn it over to our Commissioner Scott Schulte. No?
Thank you.
Oh, John next?
I will do whatever the mayor asked me to do.
Chief Piper, we did bring our fire chief.
please identify yourself for the record and go ahead.
John Piper, Coon Rapids Fire Chief. Chair Torkelson, committee members, thank you for having us, and also thank you for all of you that were able to make it to Coon Rapids. I hope the ride in the ladder truck for whoever went up wasn't too... You survived it, right?
Absolutely. I'll go again.
All right. I'm going to give you, to understand the issue that Mayor Cook talked about, I'm going to just briefly talk about what some of you have already heard. But basically, the perfect storm, if you will, is that the Staples subdivision comes in from the west through Anoka, and the Hinckley subdivision comes in through from the north through Andover. They converge in Coon Rapids prior to going into the Northtown Yard, which is basically Fridley and the city of Minneapolis. What happens is if a train's coming in at normal speed and has clearance, the crossing arms will be down for 3 to 4 minutes. You heard people before me talk about what that means to fires and to medical emergencies. That's 3 to 4 minutes. If the train does not have clearance coming through, especially in the Hanson area that we're talking about here, the train has to slow down as it comes through Anoka. When it passes Crooked Lake Boulevard, it has to stop just past there before it gets to Hanson. Well, that basically, instead of 3 to 4 minute delay at the crossing, it amounts to 6 or 8 minutes when it stops at Crooked Lake, and then it's 6 to 8 minutes at Hanson when it takes off again. That's the best case scenario in a staging situation. The problem is increased if the train's too long, it can't fit in between the two crossings, then it has to pull past Hanson. Engineer has to come back, disconnect, they have to pull forward to open up Hanson until they get clearance into the yard. So that's about 20 to 30 minutes on the front side. Then when they get clearance, they got to back up, reconnect, and continue. What does this mean? That you heard before, fires double in size every minute. It's a significant issue when we lose time. In the best case scenario, 3 to 4 minutes, worst case up close to a half hour. Medical emergencies, you heard that, seconds count. If you have a significant event like your heart stops, you quit breathing, major bleeding, and a variety of other things, we need to get there as quickly as possible to make a difference. In the back, in the middle of your brochure, there's a bunch of actual examples that have happened in Coon Rapids. I don't have to go into it. Furthermore, about a week ago, we had a structure fire. To put this into perspective, this happens on a regular basis. In the structure fire, in Coon Rapids, we have 7 people on duty when this fire came in. 4 of my coworkers got to the structure fire immediately. Three out of the seven did not because a train stopped them. I can tell you can do the math, but when you start with seven people at a structure fire and three of them don't show up for quite a while, it's a big deal. So again, this is really important from a public safety standpoint, whether it's a fire scenario, a medical scenario, or a police emergency. And with that, I'll pass the torch on to Commissioner Scott Schulte.
Appropriate that the fire chief be passing the torch.
I didn't. Yeah. Sorry.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Scott Schulte, Anoka County Commissioner, representing Coon Rapids, Andover, and Anoka. I've been with this project since it started. The real news I want to bring you today is we are locally committed to this project. Anoka County is in for 10%. The city of Coon Rapids is in for 5%. We have Burlington Northern on record saying that they're in for over their usual 5%, but they will not commit to that exact number. The county's Transit Improvement Board is in for 30% because this is an improvement to the safety of the North Star Line. We think that's a heck of a commitment by the locals to develop this project. We're looking for the 50% to come from the state, and that is the $12.6 million you heard. Total cost of the project, $25.2 million. The engineering work we've already put into play, that should be completed this August. The right-of-way acquisition, Anoka County is funding up front. That, again, should be accomplished in 2016. With the good work that you do in approving this, we will have shovels in the ground in July of 17 with a completion date of late 17. So this project will move dirt fast. It's going to happen, and it's going to happen much more efficiently with your help. In the costs, I can tell you that there are $3.1 million in engineering, design, and right-of-way costs. Right-of-way acquisitions, $4.5 million, and construction itself is $17.576 million. That's the breakdown. This is all about safety. People talk a lot about congestion and moving cars, but for me, it's more about safety. We need to grade separate some of these rail lines before we have that big accident. And it's happening all across the country. We're hearing about these trains exploding everywhere and car train accidents, and we don't need that in Minnesota. We need to avoid those headlines, and you can help us do that. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Commissioner Schulte. I see Representative Newton's in the audience. Did you have anything to add, Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I've been active in city politics in Coon Rapids for over 20 years, and this is the most important project that we've had because it is a public safety project. We have strong support, Mark Uglum, Peggy Scott, all of the senators from both parties are really pushing this project. We, in addition to our fire and police issues getting from the south end to the other, we've got Mercy Hospital, which is a major hospital on the south end of the city. And, you know, even expectant parents rushing to the hospital can be a little frantic when they have to wait 20 minutes for a train to go. So I hope that the committee will look favorably upon this project. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Dean has a question.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question, you had mentioned that BNSF is currently in for 5%, but they've intimated or actually said that they're willing to go more. Should they go more, what portion of the overall funding would be reduced if that happens?
Looks like Commissioner Schulte is coming forward.
All right. Mr. Chair, Representative, according to our county engineer, Doug Fisher, who deals with BNSF on many projects, it's rare for them to commit to even their federally mandated 5%, much less more. But he did suggest that most of what BNSF does when they contribute funds is labor. They flagging, and I think their plan is to actually include their 5% plus into parts that aren't even in our estimate, simply because they're talking about recambering the track because it's at a little bit of a curve there, and they want to recamber the track now that there's not a grade crossing. They can camber it more. That's not in our costs, so as they add more than 5%, it's going to go into unforeseen costs, so it actually wouldn't reduce any of the costs proposed.
Well, follow-up, Representative Dean?
None other than a comment, Mr. Chair. I think it's interesting that they're willing to commit to their 5%, which is federally mandated, and then they're saying that they'll give more by improving their portion of the project, not the overpass portion of the project.
Mr. Chair, Representative, my sentiments exactly.
Representative Hansen has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate this is a high-priority project. Representative Hortman, I think if there was one small change, it's H-A-N-S-O-N. If that could be changed to H-A-N-S-E-N, I think it'd be really an excellent project, and I could fully support it.
I'm not sure that would work.
Mr. Chair, I will tell you, this project, though it's physically located in my district, would benefit people throughout the North Metro. Hanson Boulevard serves traffic from Andover, Blaine, Coon Rapids, Anoka, and this is why it's so strongly supported by Representative Peggy Scott, Representative Mark Uglum, me, Representative Newton, and all of our senators. It's a really significant project for the North Metro. In Coon Rapids, in the city of Coon Rapids, we have 20,000 residents who live within 1 mile of the rail. So it's critically important for the residents of our community that these trains can move through the community and not have to be blocking the grade crossings, and that they have a safer pathway through the community. If we can diminish the chance of derailment in a community where 20,000 people live within 1 mile of the rail, I think as state legislators, that's in our job description.
President Hausman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Nash and I were talking about our visit there, which, by the way, was very impressive because in that very short time we were there, we had occasion to see several trains pass and saw the long lines of traffic. But what we recalled, and I don't see Brian Sweeney in the audience today, is that he said, because I think he was asked the question when he was at the microphone, that he said 10%. And then when we spoke privately, he even suggested, and in this case, we might be willing to do more. So I just didn't know what the nature of those conversations have been, because there was this very different message given that day.
Commissioner Schulte.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we've had an opportunity to talk with Mr. Sweeney and others from the railroad, and their commitment is obvious. They say it at every opportunity. The amount of the commitment is vague. They change pretty regularly as to what they'll commit to. Mr. Sweeney's boss was at a meeting last night. We all attended a public meeting, and he was as committed that they're going to support the project. They're 100% behind it. It improves their product. But at the same time, they're not committing that exact dollar amount and to where it would fit in the project. I would suggest, however, Mr. Chair and Representative, that if Burlington Northern submits a certain amount to this project over and above what we anticipate, that the only one that would come down here would be the state's commitment. Coon Rapids, Anoka County, and CTIB are committed to the full amounts in the project currently, and their amounts would not be diminished.
Thank you for clarifying that, Commissioner. Representative O'Driscoll has a question.
Well, actually, this is a combined Representative O'Driscoll and Erdahl question in the interest of time. We probably should have asked this question earlier, but the folks from Coon Rapids probably can give us a flavor for it. Because your community is divided by the rail, have you made provisions on either side for mutual aid and those kinds of things, police, fire, response? And secondly, does your growth patterns in the community dictate that you'd have a separate fire station on either side or a second fire station for response and or police?
I believe that would go to the fire chief, Mr. Piper.
Chair Torkelson, members of the committee, actually that's a good question. It came up at one of the bonding tour meetings. I don't remember which one, but basically this is on kind of like the south side of our town, so there is no mutual aid to the south side of our town because the river is there, and I think it was brought up to our police chief at the time, but no, there we don't have any other options over there, and the point being is that, we need the crossing.
A follow-up, Representative O'Erdahl? No. I do not have any other Commissioner Schulte.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I do apologize for the oversight in not providing the donut hole bribe, but we'll work on that for next time. We do have nice train-shaped cookies, but I forgot.
Commissioner Schulte, I reject your characterization of those donut holes. That will be struck from the record. Representative Hortman, would you like to make any closing remarks?
No, Mr. Chair, sorry, I missed Representative Uglum's introduction to the project, but it's just strongly supported by those of us in the North Metro beyond the city of Coon Rapids.
Thank you. I believe that we have no more questions on the list. Thank you for your presentation. Thank you, members, for your attendance today. This meeting is adjourned.